the Gaming Guru Podcast. He's in the best gaming podcast in the world. Guru Baby.
We are back with the Gaming Guru Podcast. I know I've missed your voice.
Oh, dude, thanks.
Have you missed my voice?
Not a fuck.
Not a fuck. There no, we have it. Swearing within 17 seconds. We're doing good.
No, it has been a while, dude. Yeah. I feel like we haven't caught up in a spell.
I think, obviously, with the I've been traveling for, it was Comic-Con, then it was Rage, and now I'm packing up house. You wouldn't tell from the actually... like very limited packing I've actually done. The van's coming on Friday.
That's always fun.
Yeah, so 2 days from now, men in overalls will come pack away my house and take all my things. And then for some reason, I'm only traveling 4 or 5 days later. So I will live in this shell of a house. I think we're getting a tent. We'll camp out here.
Yeah. Good I've times. Done that before. Yeah. When I moved down from Joburg, they took my stuff away and I was in an empty house.
Yeah. I would have to tell my three-year-old, we're camping inside because we're not unemployed. We just don't have things. But yeah, exciting, keen to move, just like for the change and see see what happens. But we have so much news to catch up on. I think we're going to jump straight into it. Do you want to kick off with... what you have found in scouring the interwebs?
Yeah, so look, there have been a couple of AAA titles I've dropped in this back end of the year.
He's holding air quotes for those of you who couldn't hear that.
AAA, I don't know, man. Like AAA is...
It's become a little bit a meaningless title.
It is a bit of a meme,
because
dude.
It's becoming like AAA just means we spent a lot of money on marketing this.
Yes, exactly, right? Yeah. We spent like $250 million on marketing and the game is broken.
Yeah.
As fucking always.
So we decided like to market this turd and to not market that one. And so the turd we decided to market is now AAA.
Yeah. So FIFA 20 career mode, absolutely broken. It's in an unplayable mess. This includes broken leagues, match congestion, underperforming AI teams. AI teams randomly picking weak starting 11s. Out of place press conference questions. Dynamic player feature. Is also misfiring. Basically, it's in an absolutely unplayable state. This has led to change.org website, where within the first like hour there were 5,000 signatures and just like skyrocketing.
What I love though is that you'll have like, please impeach this dictator. Please like bring water to the Sudan, and they get like 400 votes. Please fix FIFA career mode. 5,000 votes in an hour. It's just like, cool. I'm glad that like society's got its priorities straight.
And yeah, so it also led to the hashtag fix career mode.
Yeah.
The biggest issue is that...
And that's not millennials complaining about the job market.
No. Okay. I mean, well, do you know how many real, dude.
Do you know how many people would be like, fix career mode. Now, finally, there's a hashtag I can get behind. Like,
oh, fuck, dude. That's brilliant. Okay, so... yeah, it's into this hashtag. Yeah, you threw me off with that one. okay, so the big issue is that EA hasn't actually officially responded to any of this. They're just like just quiet.
Oh, so they're doing the PR tactic of la 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 la
yeah,
la la.
Exactly. Like, you know, maybe if we stand really still, they can't see us.
Yeah, journalist and game critics' vision is based on movement, like a T-Rex.
Yeah. So okay, that's about all I have to say about FIFA 20.
My thing though is like, did you remember, was it last year, the year before, where there were these weird career mode, there wouldn't be glitches, but like certainly broke you out of the realism thing. And the one was, you know, Peter Cech always wears his like signature scrum cap or whatever it is. Now that's obviously been coded on him as his haircut. Like it's not a separate like accessory. Yeah, yeah. So when you in career mode, like when you do press conferences,
you're or, like, standing in this fucking scrum
but in a suit. Or he'd be
what
going
a
like,
knob, dude.
This team is just signed Peter Cech and whatever. And there he is at like the, you know, walking like, or the paparazzi taking photos. There's shaking hands with the manager, fuller suit, but like tie everything, but with his scrum, with his scrum cap on. I was like, okay, oh cool. Gosh,
it's obviously and business. So it's in case he's going to plow through like a ton of chicks, bro.
That's my business scrum cap. It's more for like signing big deals.
Oh gosh. So I don't hurt myself. yeah. Okay. So moving on to the next AAA mess, Ubisoft's big pile of poo, Ghost Recon Breakpoint, absolute mess. They
I feel like we were saying earlier, I feel like it's in the name. Like then
yeah,
like,
totally.
A breakpoint is broken.
Yes.
Duh.
You know, I feel like for a lot of people, they've reached their breakpoint with Ubisoft titles. It's sort of like become homogenous now. Like every game of theirs sort of feels the same. They have the same like open world, just with varying degrees of quality.
Yeah.
The same sort of AI cover systems.
What's interesting for me is like a lot of guys will say that is the one benefit of having a massive studio with multiple titles. You go, if someone is creating the like a cover based system, and it's like, wow, this is really good. We can implement it in The Division, everything. In Watch Dogs, in whatever, because it's still a good cover based system. But you can't help but see it and go, this is exactly the same as another game. I mean, Ubisoft became synonymous with climb the highest point to scan the region. Like,
all the towers, and now all their games are these sort of hot, half-baked, like RPG lights.
Yeah.
You know, and again, now with Ghost Recon Breakpoint being sort of like having looter shooter mechanics with guns having different stats.
Yeah, yeah.
Equip them to like level up and like that kind of nonsense.
So anecdotally, I had a friend who he worked at EA. And it was obviously, you know, as a South African, you went like, wow, that's so cool that you got to work at a big studio. What game are you working on? He's like, no, my team, like we're in the like physics and design department. I'm not, obviously they've got a better title than that, but like his team worked on like fabric physics. And so it was like, they worked on the flags blowing in the wind or like, and so that would be used in like a soccer game, in the flags, like on a golf course, on like players running when the weather's bad or whatever and their shirts. But like, it's not like he's working on multiple games, but he's not on any one title. His team of three people are just coding like what fabrics do when, you know, different weather conditions are on them.
Yeah, man, that's fucking corporate monster, bro. That's how it goes, dude. So Ghost Recon Breakpoint, a lot of people had high hopes for this one since Wildlands. Look, fun game. A lot of people really enjoyed Wildlands. Some didn't. Definitely a departure from, it's much less a tactical shooter than it is like kind of like some looter shooter, third person Far Cry madness.
For me, it was closer to a Destiny than a Ghost Recon game. You
know, yeah, exactly. Like, and
especially think Splinter Cell or those sort of
games. The same goes for that, right? So I think the differentiation between like all their titles is definitely just like narrowing over time, where this all sort of blend into one another.
Yeah.
But yeah, broken AI running around in circles.
T-posing, like
guns not working. Fallout 76. You know, guns disappearing, like falling through the level design.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so definitely people are describing this game as like as Ubisoft's Fallout 76.
Oh wow!
The
what a title!
All the cinematics and sort of story dump moments and cutscenes are very reminiscent of like an Xbox 360 like COD title or something. It feels like, very cheesy, very like very not, like empty.
80s like, action hero.
Yeah, like super cringe, like absolutely cringe. Oh, yeah. So people like are saying this is a lot less than, less Fallout 76, more Anthem-esque.
Oh, okay.
You know, type levels of herp-a-dup.
So like broken or more that like there's just so much padding?
It's broken, it's padded, and it's lame.
Okay.
Like it's cringe. Yeah. It's cringeworthy. It's like a big old meme.
Hectic. Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, that was one of the few reasons people actually played 76. It was like almost, I'm going meme hunting. To see what like, clips I can...
How far do I have to walk till I find one?
I'm doing this for Reddit. Like, doing this for karma.
Cool. And on to our next AAA fucking murder mystery.
Great segue. 76.
Yeah, Activision calls a crisis meeting as pre-orders for COD Modern Warfare plummet. So COD Modern Warfare looks pretty fucking cool.
Yeah.
There have been a couple of stories around it so far, one of them being the supply drops, their sort of version of the loot box.
Once again, when Tim speaks like a post-British person, he's using air quotes.
which, fine. I mean, look, I don't see how, like loot boxes are newsworthy these days because it's just like every game has them now. It's like this game has loot boxes. Like, okay, well, fucking tell me something I don't know. Right. So that was the first story. The second story was that people thought this game might be too violent. It's really quite dark, quite gritty, quite violent. Some people might like it.
You mean the fact they're going back into story mode. And so they are like,
and
the typical, I think the narrative now, like white people good versus brown people bad. Like, and it's kind of like, are we still in that narrative?
Yeah, but the biggest issue for let me backtrack a little bit. So the issue with the supply drops is that it is you cannot earn supply drops through gameplay. Cash store only.
Oh my god!
And we know from previous COD titles, and they have released some info that there will be full on guns, like not just skins, like full on guns, and some of the best weapons we know are usually
can only be bought.
Only be bought.
Oh my man!
So a lot of people are saying pay to win.
Yeah, of course.
Fair enough. The biggest issue, though, and the most recent story, came out of the State of Play. Where at the end of the presentation, right at the bottom of the screen, in small text was PS4 exclusive 1 year till October 2020. A lot of people know that Call of Duty is annual release.
Yeah.
And in a year's time, no one's playing that shit anymore.
100%, especially like, on a competitive level. Like,
no one's playing it. Yeah. So like, tons of people have canceled their pre-orders. I mean, look, it may be the case of...
Even on PlayStation. Surely they're like, meh. Like...
Yeah, I mean, it may be the case of... I think it was with the original COD Modern Warfare. Yeah. I think people went... There was like some kind of mass boycott. And then their release, everyone ended up fucking playing the game anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But I mean, like these... If you're on Xbox or PC, you're not playing it.
Yeah.
Until October 2020.
Yeah, I think particularly for people who have a PlayStation and a PC. And they were going, oh, cool. Finally my chance to... Because a lot of people, my preferred input format for shooters is mouse and keyboard. And so like, yeah, I was going to buy Call of Duty on PC because now it's the same title and they're giving it way more support. And because of cross-play, I can play with my PlayStation buddies. Now they're like, oh, screw it. I'm going to cancel my PC pre-order and go PlayStation.
I mean, it's tough. I mean, for one of the biggest releases of the year, which Call of Duty arguably is.
Always is, yeah.
Always, yeah. Like right up there with FIFA. I feel like this is strategic from PlayStation, from Sony's point of view.
Yeah.
You know, we're reaching the end of the PS4 life cycle. I can see them being like, let's try and latch onto one of the biggest releases of the year and just make that last push.
Yeah.
Anyone was like on the fence about buying a PlayStation, you know, let's just fucking do this now. They'll buy it. They'll sell it later, but we'll make a couple more sales.
Yeah.
Like right at the end, you know, before PS5 drops. You know, maybe people have been waiting out, be like, I'm not going to get PS4, bro, because, you know, PS5's coming.
And it works, these 1 year exclusives, because I remember Xbox bought Tomb Raider exclusive for like a year. And I'll be honest, like, I was buying 90% of my games on PlayStation. I bought it on Xbox because I wanted to play it now. Yeah. And then when it came out on PlayStation, even though you were getting like definitive version for the same price, I was like, it's like 6 months old now. I don't want to play
exactly, right?
Yeah.
And
that's, I think it's exacerbated by a game that only has a year shelf life. You know, you could
argue, that's messed up.
You could argue that you could still pick up Tomb Raider. I think it was Rise of the Tomb Raider was the one that was exclusive. You could still pick it up now, but there's no like... There's no time delay because you're not waiting for full servers or whatever. It's like you can play. It's timeless in that sense.
Yeah.
But, you know, a COD that suddenly, you know, a year later, the population drops, I can imagine, to like 20, 30% of people are playing once a new COD.
Well, exactly. I mean,
Black Ops people are still playing. In fact, they're probably playing more now in hype for Modern Warfare. As soon as when MW launches, everyone's like, cheers, Black Ops, like... It's nice knowing you.
Yeah, so I mean, and this type of like timed exclusivity tactic is generally not common for PlayStation. No. They'll have their PS4 exclusives.
Yeah, or exclusive content.
Or exclusive content. Yeah. But like I can't remember the last time they had like a timed, like you can only get this here for 1 year.
Yeah.
You know, especially a big release like that.
Was it full game? Wasn't it like...
Full game.
The full game is going to be exclusive on PlayStation for a year.
For a whole year, yeah. So wow. I feel like it's just a marketing ploy to sell more units in like the last push, and like it does feel a bit.
Are you sure?
Bit because of a schnai. Like,
but I mean, you mean saying I can't go now and buy Modern Warfare for Xbox for a year?
You can buy it, but you can pre-order it, but you'll only have access to it on your Xbox after October 2020.
No.
Yeah.
Jeepers.
Yeah, man.
I thought the way I read it was like there was exclusive content, like there was Spec Ops mode and there was all this extra stuff. That
the game. It's the game, man.
Well, then at least you can play mobile, Call of Duty Mobile, which just came out.
Yeah, dude. And apparently Call of Duty Mobile is slaying.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, a lot of mates of mine, all my PS4 group are like...
Oh, I think it'd be your Xbox and PC mates.
They're posting screenshots of their wins and shit. Like, but it's cool. They're digging it. And maybe like mobile is a place where these types of games... like should live.
Okay.
I mean, they've got that same type of economy.
Yeah.
You know, it seems to be that.
And it's a free game.
Yeah.
It's free, and then you, but obviously the skins and stuff are the normal loot boxing. Dope, dude. Yeah.
Hype.
Cool. I thought you were gonna, when you're talking about the all the failure on 76, you're gonna talk about our favorite Fallout 76's latest meme fail.
Do you like Fallout 76? The gift that keeps on giving, hey? So they've, so Bethesda has had to recall those power armor helmets that went out with their collector's edition, because apparently they're growing mold that could kill you.
Amazing.
So Fallout 76 might just fucking kill you now.
Yeah. Like, in real life,
it's,
too.
It's gotten that bad, right? It's gotten that bad. It might just take your life as well.
This feels like one of those like horror movies.
Yeah.
Where like, I don't know, someone fucked a leprechaun or something like that. And now this game is cursed. But it's the one, I don't know if you followed the Nightmare on Elm Street series. I think it was like the fourth one where like, they're busy making the next Nightmare on Elm Street movie, and like the props come alive. Like it's
sick.
It's part of like, it's a movie within a movie, like a horror movie.
I love that postmodern shit, dude.
So it's like the items are cursed because this is actually Freddy Krueger's real glove, whatever. And then it starts like coming alive. So it's like, it feels like that sort of level. Like someone did something dodgy, sold their soul to the devil to get this out on time.
Todd Howard.
Yeah. Meanwhile.
Like, oh, listen, Satan, you mind if we just, you know, have a bit of a powwow in my jacuzzi?
I really need Skyrim to do well. Okay, cool. I'll make Skyrim do well, but you'll pay later. Oh, yeah, later.
Oh, fuck, dude, yes. Okay, cool. And then French court forces Steam to allow resale of games.
This is huge.
Yeah, so this is a big one. So up until now, whether you are aware of it or not, it doesn't matter how many games you buy on Steam, you never really own them because...
We know when Steam goes down and you try and play them.
Yeah, exactly. They're all tied to an account. You can't sell them on. Yeah. You can't do anything with it. You're paying for a subscription in a way. It's a one-off sub.
Yeah, and you have
access to the game for life.
But no one else has access. I mean, you can give them access to your Steam account, but then they are you, and now you can't access your Steam account at the same time.
Yeah, so basically the European, I think it was the European Commercial Competition Consumer Commission, a lot of those ones was like, yo, listen, fuck you. And
fuck you.
fuck you. Sucker and <blame. laughs> And so you should be allowed to resell your Steam games now after this legislation goes through. So they won in court. But I guess as you pointed out, this will probably just, you know, give them another way of making more money off us.
So, I mean,
you know, Greg Newell was like, no problem.
See, this is an opportunity.
Sign a premium on it.
So
that's my Gabe Newell like impression, dude. Where am I? 1 to 10.
you sound more like what I imagine the little like gremlin living inside his brain sounds like.
But that's what you hear when he opens his mouth.
I get the impression of, you remember Ninja Turtles? There was that like Krang that used to like drive that big like robot dude, whatever. That's the vibe I'm getting. Like this little squishy little gremlin thing inside him that's. Which why it needs such a girthy body for like the fuel tank, really.
Yeah, so famously Steam makes a nice big fat old cut on everything that passes through their store, and rightly so, they'll probably do this here as well.
Yeah, every time you trade an item, so you sell a 30 Rand item, they take 1%, I think, of every transaction value, which if you were, in a way, just kept skimming the value until like it all just disappears. And so now they'll probably do something similar. Hey, you want to trade your 300 Rand game to someone for whatever price you set, because it is marketplace. I think unfortunately what it's going to do is, half the time when accounts were hacked, the only thing they could really do is trade off your items. But let's be honest, you've got to have a lot of items to come anywhere close to the value of your games.
Totally.
If people are now able to like trade off your games, because like, oh shit, my account got hacked. Yeah, I lost all my cosmetics. But at least I can play all those thousands of games I bought. not anymore.
Cool. Yeah, so I mean, fuck.
I get that South Park meme. It's like, and they're gone.
And they're gone. It's all gone. Yeah, there were a couple more data points here from State of Play. The one was Last of Us Part 2, no multiplayer. RIP.
Yeah.
I
mean, like,
yeah.
I just get that John Oliver meme now. It's just like, cool.
Who was
ever playing multiplayer on Last of Us?
No, apparently Last of Us, the multiplayer was really popular. Like, a lot of people enjoyed it. I never played it. It was there. It existed. I'm glad it did. And people had a lot of fun with it.
It feels like, honestly, people going, my mom only bought me one game. And now I want to play multiplayer on my favorite game. And so I play, which was basically just the Uncharted multiplayer.
Yeah.
Running around exactly. Third person shooting each other. And we all know how popular Uncharted's multiplayer is.
Yeah, look, I mean, to be fair, that game came out at a time when like every game had to have a multiplayer tacked onto it.
Yeah, that's what last year's Battle Royale mode was.
Well, exactly. So, I mean, that's why it's there. And I guess Naughty Dog's in a position where they don't fucking feel like they need to do that. I mean, they wanted to chase trends. They could have, you know, Last of Us Part 2, Battle Royale with supply drops and fucking loot boxes.
Yeah, single player game and you get unlocked skins midway. But they're not like, now a denim jacket or something. It's like, now a foam hand. Or like,
yeah.
You know, you can turn your gun into a laser beam.
Now griefing. And, typically, I've really enjoyed the way that Naughty Dog incorporates, you know, skins into their games, where it's literally from playing through content, you unlock. There are unlockables. Yeah. I feel like you can't, there are no unlockables in games anymore.
Yeah, like where you have to perform a particular feat or something and then you unlock it.
And it's just there in the list, you know. I love that. So, look, one of my most anticipated games of life.
Of ever.
I guess. Yeah, so haven't pre-ordered it yet, but a lot of my friends have.
So you're living vicariously through there.
Totally, yeah. my fingers on the button, man. Yeah, yeah. Fingers on the button. Just, you know.
If I saw any value in pre-ordering, I would. I just like buy the game online the day before it comes out, and you'll get it delivered to you.
Yeah. So okay, cool. That's about it for gaming news from me.
Oh no, man! You can't move on without like there's a release date. That's super super important. Yeah, like 20th of Feb. So now, like,
my birthday month.
Oh, nice.
So, which is why that's the only thing holding me back from pre-ordering.
I'm going to spend the birthday money I haven't got yet.
Well, exactly. Like, I could kind of like pressure my girlfriend into getting it for me.
Just hint, like, openly hint. It's like, oh, babe, have a podcast where you talk to hundreds of people about how in your birthday, I don't know, maybe the Christmas fairies,
that's the thing.
One of our fans will buy Tim a copy of The Last of Us.
I feel like it could be something like a string that I could pull on.
Yeah.
Like for like, you know,
and now we segue to our Kickstarter campaign. Get Tim his birthday present of his dream.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. A Fallout 76 collector's edition with mold.
Okay, wait, are we ready to move on to TV news?
Yeah, let's do some TV news.
Okay,
man.
Okay, dope. Fucking love TV news, man. You know, this podcast is kind of like progressed. I'm bringing more of this nerdy, like, TV fucking nonsense into it. Whatever.
It started as a gaming thing, now it's more like a Comic-Con.
Oh, yeah. So, okay, TV news. We got Spider-Man back in the MCU.
Yeah.
Look, after a lot of back and forth, and I know, like, I talked a bunch of, you know, nonsense about it in our last podcast, but now officially, Sony and Marvel have reached a deal. It's a bit different from the deal they had before. The deal they had before was Sony was the sole producer, and they were putting up the entire production budget. Marketing budget comes on Marvel Disney's side. Disney makes 5% profit from the overall sales at the box office, but they also take all the merchandising profits there. Now they're still going to be taking all the merchandising profits, still putting up all the marketing budget. But they're going to be co-producing the movie, co-financing. We're going to have 25% of the financing coming from Disney Marvel side, the rest coming from Sony side. So we're going to have co-production, co-financing credits, which is interesting because it actually changes the way that the rights are handled slightly. So technically, this will be the first co-produced Spider-Man movie in history. So they're going to move forward with that, with a 25% box office take for Marvel, which is a much bigger cut than they got before.
I mean, it seems like, more fair though. Like, you put in 25, you get 25. Not you and put in zero and you get 5 and merch, and it's just like, okay.
Yeah. And look, like 5% off like $1 billion is like not too shabby, mate. But you know, it seems a bit more fair.
I'd settle for one. Like,
yeah, you know what?
For me not doing anything.
Truth, bro. Fucking truth. So we're going to have definitely an MCU-driven Spider-Man 3.
Cool.
which we suspect is going to be Spider-Man Hunted.
Okay.
They want to bring in Kraven the Hunter.
Oh, yeah.
You know, at the end of Spider-Man Far From Home. Spoiler alert! His identity is released to the world.
Yeah.
And now, like, all guns are aimed on him. It's like John Wick type vibes.
Yeah.
You know, he's on the run, you know. And that might actually open up a gateway, or at least a door, to have Peter Parker exit the MCU, where he's on the run, his you know, identity's out there, and he has to like escape from everyone who's known him because they might be in the crossfire.
And so that was one of the big like cynical theories about this whole thing, was going, if they couldn't work out a deal and John Q. Spider-Man suddenly basically evaporated like his own like personal Thanos like snap, because like he's now in the movies and then suddenly he's not, and we've got this like, we were joking about like Pablo Señor Arachno, and it's just Tom Holland with a giant Mexican mustache.
Yeah.
But like, if you just suddenly get rid of him, it's going to be apparent that like, what happened to Spider-Man after we set him up as basically Tony Stark 2.0, you know, the kind of central character of Phase 4. Well, phase 5. What's phase 5 now?
Phase 4.
Phase 4 is what you're going into.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's basically this pivotal role.
Yeah.
And if he just disappeared, it'd be like, what the hell happened? Whereas now it's almost like, now that we have access to him, we can kill him off properly over the course of 3 movies.
Yeah. So like I can imagine that actually the salt, if they actually did that, is like, boom, they killed Spider-Man. They're like, what now?
So yeah, exactly. And they go like, the other cynical thing was about the fact that the too many cooks thing. Going beforehand, they've never been co-produced properly.
Yes.
And so there's always a case going, you got your creative vision, here, Thomas. We've got our creative vision. But now to try and merge two groups, especially when it's going to be, there's still a 75-25 split. So when the writing comes out, it's going, we should do the following. And a Marvel guy that goes, well, you know, actually, we should do this. And let's have a vote. Cool. Yeah. 75% say, fuck you. 25% say, don't fuck me. Okay, cool. So we're going to go ahead and say fuck you and do what we want to do anyway. So it's like, you hope that they can work together because they're fans of,
to be fair, I think that there is just like a really good working relationship between Kevin Feige and Amy, forget a damn surname.
That's an interesting,
producer from Sony. They just got a great relationship.
I was just wondering the spelling of.
Like the whole team, right? The whole team, Tom Holland, all his co-stars.
Dig each other and all
And they'll all be shifted over.
Yeah.
So, you know, his entire class of characters, right? Like they're all Sony appointees, could say. They're all Sony casting. So that whole group, you know, the writer, the director, that's all Sony has control over that.
Yeah.
So they can move that over quite seamlessly.
Yeah.
So you have the same writing, same quality. You'll have, you know, this path that that Kevin Feige's put them on. So for what I imagine, Spider-Man 3 will have the Spider-Man Hunted. From there, they're going to have him appear in Venom 2.
Okay.
So Spider-Man Hunted will be 2020. 2021 will have Venom 2. And most likely, a post-credit scene with Spider-Man in it, if he doesn't play a bigger role.
Okay.
You might have some Tom Hardy and Tom Holland action on screen together. They'll be dope. And then Sony will take the reins for the next film. So it'll kind of be passing the baton over between each other on a movie-by-movie basis. Yeah. That's kind of what it's going for. Like,
because it felt like for a long time, because Sony was going to hold on to the Spider-Man thing, that they would essentially start exploring almost like what Warner Brothers are doing with the Joker. It's almost going like, let's do origin stories of all the bad dudes. So like we create this almost MCU just around Spider-Man. So it's like,
well, exactly,
this whole universe just centered around him.
So that is what they're still doing.
Yeah, yeah. Because we've got
The next one is Jared Leto as Morbius.
That was it. Yeah, yeah.
And that's slated for like 2021 or 22 or some shit like that. So they might actually have Tom Holland be in that.
Yeah.
You know. So that could be a way of going about things. And then also opening up the door for Kevin Feige and those writers to actually write him out of that side of things. cool. So that's some Spidey. So the next one is also MCU related. So now that Marvel has the rights to the X-Men, they're going to start casting for their next kind of round of movies. And No announcements have been made yet, but sources within Disney say that they're looking at African-American actors for the roles of Professor X and Magneto.
Okay, interesting. Yeah.
Now, it is an interesting one. I really like it. I've always thought of Magneto and Professor X as sort of like Martin Luther King versus like Malcolm X type vibe.
Okay, where
the one guy is like, I have a dream. The other guy is like, by any means necessary. Yeah, like they both have the same goal, but they have
a very good analogy.
Very different ways of going about it, right? Yeah. Some people may argue, but Magneto's Jewish and like there aren't that many black Jews. And now the counter argument to that was that they only put that into Magneto's backstory in like the 1980s. Before that, he was just a white bruh.
Okay.
You know, he was just a bruh who could bend metal.
It was always just important for me, not that it was Nazis, but that he came from a persecuted background. Because it was always like, he hated on authority and humans in general and saw like the evil that they could become.
And of like othering of, of and someone so, like, based on who they are.
If it's persecution based on, in slavery, that case, religion or race or whatever, as long as he comes from a background where he like hates on the system for the persecution it brings. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm kind of cool with that.
Yeah,
and if there's anyone out there who's like, no, but I can shimmy one. But, you know, you have 20 years worth of white guys in those roles. And, you know, if you don't even like Sir Ian McKellen or Patrick Stewart, there's some other white guys doing it as well. Like, you got the younger casting. So, fucking eat your heart out, mate.
Yeah.
That's what I have to say about that. Some other cool casting news. Matt Reeves, the Batman with Robert Pattinson. We got two new castings.
What are your thoughts on the Pattinson casting? Because it's like, it started at first with, like, just absolute hate. The kind of like, I'm trying to think, the last time we had that much hate was probably like the Val Kilmer casting. And that and that didn't turn out well because the movie was so shocking. I didn't really hate him in the role. Yeah. I just like that movie was just so bad.
Yeah. For me, it started off with a bit of hate. They're like, oh, bro, Twilight. Yeah. Oh, riff.
Sparkly bat.
You know, sparkly bat.
A vampire finally becomes a bat.
What people don't know is that in the last, like 10 years, Robert Pattinson has, like 10 to 15 years, Robert Pattinson has basically turned down every big budget blockbuster that's come his way. And he's spoken to his agent specifically and said, find me the weirdest, most intense roles that you can.
Yeah.
And he's gone like, full method, he's completely reinvented himself, taken some outstanding roles.
So he actually went out and became a billionaire and had his parents killed and like...
Yes, exactly. Okay. And he's really like grown as an actor. His range is incredible. Oh, yeah. I really think that he can carry this role well. People underestimate him as an actor because, I mean, he didn't really have much to work with the Twilight saga. It's really kind of how he got his name out. And the fuck he was in that, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was Cedric Diggory.
Harry Potter alum, hey, Jesus Christ. Yeah. Okay, cool. So, fuck it. I completely forgot about that. He was Cedric, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And now
he's dead.
Now he's dead. Okay, so we got some new casting news for that. Jeffrey Wright has been casted as Commissioner Gordon. Big fan of Jeffrey Wright. The guy is an absolute talent. And then the rumors are true. Jonah Hill as unspecified villain. Jonah Hill's been cast. Apparently, the news last week was he's demanding twice as much as Robert Pattinson. But like, I can see that. Like, I mean, Rob hasn't been in
that's
big budget in a while.
That's the problem of turning
Jonah
down.
Jonah Hill got nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah,
like
Moneyball, I think.
Yeah, for was it Wolf of Wall Street?
I'm not sure.
One of those. But anyway, he's fucking massive. You know, he's been all over Hollywood for a while now. So my only qualms would be, please not the Penguin.
Yeah, it's too on the money. All the Photoshops have shown the Penguin. Like,
yeah, it's too on the nose. It can't be fat and can't be funny.
Yeah, like, I think you nailed it when you said that because it's like, that's old Jonah Hill. This is like, if this was Jonah Hill who had like only done Seth Rogen movies and Superbad 3.
You know,
super baddest.
But I think it could he'd make a really good Riddler. I mean, did you watch Maniac on Netflix?
No, what's that?
Maniac. It's Jonah Hill and Emma Stone.
Okay.
They sort of enter into.
I saw the previews. It looked like Legion weird.
Yeah, they enter into like it's like a drug testing program where there's a new designer drug that can help you kind of deal with your past issues. They both have. He's like schizophrenic and he's got psychosis. She's like a manic depressive with suicidal tendencies.
The original odd couple.
And the drugs like they kind of make them relive traumatic experiences and. but they keep like finding each other in these kind
in
of
these dreams.
So it's got this like magical realism, but it's probably like the best that Jonah Hill's ever been.
I hate that.
Cause I mean, like he's schizophrenic. He like sees his brother that's tied to like these trauma and he like speaks to people that aren't there and he's trying to like, she's trying to make a relationship with this guy. And he's like, I'm crazy. I gave proper stalker vibes to my ex. Like you don't want to be anywhere near me. Yeah. I'm fucked in the head. So it's, he's like carrying that. Really, really great show. Oh, yeah. Very much worth watching. Cool. Got some release dates. El Camino, the
Breaking Bad
movie, one of my biggest releases of the year for me, at least. Mm. I just rewatched Breaking Bad.
Oh, the whole thing.
Yeah, in the last couple months. Kind of as a lead up to this. Yeah. Look, my third time watching Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah, I watched it twice as well.
Yeah, it's just, like, there's so not a bad episode.
What I dig is that you just pick up some, when you know. Just
pick up more things, yeah.
When you know that, like, the foreshadowing.
Yeah.
You didn't realize that something was foreshadowing at the time, but then later on you're like, oh my word, there was such a huge, like, decision or turning point, yeah, for the character. Yeah.
So that drops October 11 on Netflix next week. We got Joaquin Phoenix, the Joker, dropping on Friday, 4th of October. I've already bought some tickets for that.
Nice.
Walking Dead season 10 October 6th. If anyone cares, maybe like the one guy out there who still watches the show. Oh wait, Tim. Yeah, power, bro.
There are two guys that follow our podcast. One for Path of Exile, like squeezing it, like shoehorning it in somewhere. And the one guy's like, when are we going to have more Walking Dead news?
Oh, God. Okay, so, and then my last little...
Speaking of walking.
News nugget. Nice segue there. Walker Texas Ranger reboot on CBS. It looks like Jared... Padalecki will be from Supernatural will be taking up the lead role. He's the brother with the long hair, the taller one. Apparently in an interview when asked, they asked the producer of Supernatural, like, how long are you going to be doing the show for? He's like,
till we run out of evil things.
As long as those boys still want to make the show, we'll fucking do it, mate. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, I think once you've killed Satan, a couple of Texas outlaws is going to be,
well, exactly. You
know, that's more of a retirement gig than anything else.
So, dude, fuck, that's me.
That's the news.
That's all my news. Sorry, I kind of took a big old dump on the desk.
Yeah, no, but it's one of those things of the one advantage of when you take a break from the pod for a bit is like the news kind of just piles up. And also, I think we're getting to that time of the year where it's just like you almost feel...
Speaking of piles.
Yeah, speaking of piles. It's just segue day today. But it feels like as we start getting towards this time of the year, entertainment news starts piling up because people are almost going like... Cool. What? I'm going to be off work for a while. What do I feel like binging? Games, movies, TV shows, like get it all ready. I mean, you talk about everything being piled into one kind of area or one sort of kind of time period. I just came back from Comic-Con and Rage, which for some reason are the two biggest events, but for some reason are a week apart, which is just like, seems a rather silly state of affairs.
Do you think it's a case of like one of the newer entrant to the market would be Comic-Con saying, we're going to put this right over here.
So look,
to take your market share.
They used to be a month apart. And then I think the catalyst for the move was two things. The one, because of school holidays being a little bit earlier, Rage always tries to be the weekend that school holidays end, which has now just happened. So they moved a week forward so that instead of being in the first weekend of October, they become the last weekend of September. So you've got Comic-Con traditionally beginning of September, Rage beginning of October. A month apart, it's not a big deal. But now one moves forward, so now they're 3 weeks or like 2.5 weeks apart. And then Comic-Con goes, hey, if we move 1 week later, we can hit the public holiday, which was on the Tuesday this year. And so you've got a fest that ran Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday for suppliers the same price because they're not charging them per day. They're charging them to be there. So now you've had them literally, the one ended on Tuesday, the other one started on a Friday. So like 3 day gap between the two. The numbers so far, so Rage's numbers haven't been presented, at least by a press release, but Comic-Con hit 71,000 people.
Sure. That's quite a few. Yeah. That's a fair few.
Yeah, last year was 39,000. Wow. So serious growth. Look, way bigger venue and a fourth day is a big deal.
Cool.
And also, it was fortuitous, and I don't think they'll have this for a while, but the fact that because the public holiday was on a Tuesday, The problem with expos,
like a lot of people took time off Monday.
Yeah, a lot of the time with expos, you get that one dead day. It's usually Friday.
Yeah.
Friday's a dead day. Saturday and Sunday are packed.
Mm.
Now what happened? Saturday was your opening day. Sunday was still like a full day. Monday was your dead day, if you want to call it that. And then Tuesday was also rampant.
Yeah.
But the thing is, Monday wasn't, I felt that Monday wasn't as dead as Fridays usually are.
Try.
Because the fact that the Monday, a lot of people took leave. Because yeah, like the next day is a public holiday. And so like you had almost like, full Saturday, full Sunday, full Tuesday, and Monday was like maybe 25% bigger than Friday normally is. So you had, it was just a perfect storm for a convention. And like I said, from a supplier point of view, you're getting four, let's call it 3.5 days for the price of, you were usually getting 2.5 days.
Yeah.
And so it was worthwhile. Also for a lot of suppliers, it was a case of going, you're building up your stand, and you can just like ship it to Rage, which is, you know, a couple of kilometers, you know, but within Joburg. It's not one of those like, cool, break it all down, send it to the warehouse. A month later, you know, unpack it, send it back. It was like, there was no, you know, midpoint. You could basically send it from the one venue to the next. So that obviously saves some money. But I think what it's done is it's forced the hand of suppliers to go, you can only really choose one from a budget point of view. I did hear that Rage's costs went down considerably because they wanted to obviously make sure it's full. And I think Comic-Con has hurt them a little bit in terms of that. But I felt that they've, whether intentionally or because their hand was forced, have become far more of a high-end tech and gaming festival rather than Comic-Con trying to be a mass appeal event. Listening to some people's critiques of Rage in the past is that because they were the only show in town, they could go almost up, absorb every part of, if you think of like the Venn diagram of gaming being like the sweet spot is Rage or conventions, they were going, oh, we'll absorb cosplay, we'll absorb esports, we'll absorb gaming, we'll absorb like
comics,
anything, whatever, that there's anything in those fringe areas and put in Rage. And people were kind of like, yeah, this is cool because together we're stronger. But now you're getting to a stage almost where there's a critical mass in a lot of these festivals to be able to go like, maybe Comic-Con needs to become like geek culture and like, you know, almost like step away from gaming. You know, like, unfortunately, they're not the same company. So there's a bit of competition. I believe competition makes people stronger. But I think you've got this feeling of like, if Comic-Con were a Walmart or a Macro type thing where they offer everything, you know, so if you bought one ticket, you'd see everything. Rage is having to position itself as a specialist. So like I was saying, I think Rage has had its hand forced to basically try and reinvent itself as a more high-end tech festival, which, you know, might be at the end of the day the right thing. So the land's also still super popular, that was packed the whole time.
Always.
But yeah, it might be a space where it becomes the kind of gaming esports space, and Comic-Con maybe
reinvents. Because Comic-Con isn't really like on the esports. I think Rage is leaning.
They've got VS Gaming. So like there was still a really, really impressive and really big stage there. They gave away R1 million in Counter-Strike and Dota. But yeah, it feels like, if I'm honest, VS Gaming would be a better fit at Rage because of who's there. I just know this history because of like when Quesi and VS both hosted a festival there, and it was, you know, at the same time, same game, same prize pool. So it was like a little bit, I suppose, a dodgy history. But yeah, great festivals. I just wish they were further apart so that our calendar was a little bit more spread out. The reason for that has always been traditionally that there's no review code to be able to show early in the year, which is where EGE always suffered, because your case of going, cool, we got a festival in June. Yeah, there are no games now. In fact, it's like they always had it, I think, just after E3. So even games had only just been announced. It was really nothing for you to get your hands on. But this year, there was nothing to get your hands on anyway. Like there was, I mean, sort of like you got hands-on code with like Medieval and like Bee Simulator and like new-ish games, but like,
Is at Rage.
Yeah, and like the Neo 2 demo was at Rage and at Comic-Con. But like nothing, there's no CODs. There was no Assassin's Creed. There was no Watch Dogs, like big AAA titles that you could get your hands on. So that argument kind of fell a bit flat. I know next year we're back to console wars. And so then you're going to see Sony and Xbox put down money. Sony was present at Rage and Comic-Con. Xbox was visibly absent. Like they did a tiny, tiny activation at Rage. I didn't see them at all at Comic-Con. But it was nice to see some brands get in the space. So like Vodacom was a big sponsor of Rage. KFC was a huge sponsor of Comic-Con.
Awesome.
So brands are getting into the space, which is great. But yeah, that's pretty much the podcast this week. Sorry for the abrupt ending. It's just like, I don't want to get into like a massive discussion point now on Rage or Comic Con and like the validity of the, you know, the South African industry and all that, but like maybe something we can chat about next week. Obviously had a lot of news to catch up on, some very, very juicy stories, but yeah, that's us. Shot for listening in. Thanks for being patient while we had the 2 week break. We're probably going to be on a break for another week or so while I do all this German putting my life into a box and then unpacking the other side. We'll also experiment with how we're going to record the podcast over the internet, probably Skype or Discord or something. Sick. And yeah, we will see you in a couple of weeks. I've been Gareth. I'm always joined by Tim. And this has been the Gaming Guru Podcast. You can get us on Twitter if you have any questions or things you want to chat about. I'm at the Gareth Woods. Tim is at Tim and Fish. And until next time, peace.
Peace.
The Gaming Guru Podcast. Easily the best gaming podcast in the world.